And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Yes, it's true. I'm coming to you live from Jacksonville. And I'm telling you, it is drop-dead gorgeous. I wouldn't be surprised if most of the listeners are out pulling weeds in their yard right now, because it just feels so good outside. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Oh my word, do I have information for you today. It is just too good to pass up. It's almost as if I'm chomping at the bit to give this to you. If I'm not here this morning to help you and to encourage you and to help end suffering and disease and to help encourage people to improve their health, then what am I here for? Well, I haven't the foggiest idea. So I probably should use my time as efficiently as possible. One thing that I want to say is, as I share this information with you this morning, you're not helpless. You're completely capable of making your own decisions. You can decide what you want to do with your body. You're in the driver's seat. You know exactly the direction your ship is going, and no one can force you against your will to do something that's not good for you and that's not healthy. So maybe you should kind of keep that in mind. Now, quick story. I'll make it fast, but I had sardines for lunch one day this week, and they were packed in olive oil, which that's just the way I like them. Some rumors are out there saying the olive oil could be healthy, so I'm kind of going on those. But I was trying not to make a mess, and I was outside, so I said, I'm not going to open up this can of sardines in the front seat of my pickup, so I'm going to go out and put my tailgate down and open them up in the back of the truck just in case I spill, because usually they pack them tight. There's not any air bubbles, so when you open it, if it's tilted a little bit one way or the other, olive oil will come out. But I left it in the back of the truck after I got the sardines up, and I said, I'll take care of that after I run an errand. So I went to the store. When I came back up, there was oil everywhere because of grackles. I don't know how, you know what a grackle is, those black birds in the parking lot of grocery stores. Yeah, they're spectacular birds. They love to strut their stuff. So evidently, it was highly valuable to them. And there was something in the olive oil and the sardine liquid they just couldn't live without. So they were fighting over it. Anyway, that's not true when it comes to margarine, folks. By the way, if those sardines have been packed in corn oil, well, grackles aren't stupid. I'm not saying that human beings are. Or am I? But they wouldn't even touch it. Haven't you seen the experiments where they take a stick of margarine and they put it out in the forest and nothing touches it? Now, that's not true with a stick of butter. All the animals are jealous and covetous for the butter. They want it. It has nutrients they desire and need. All right. This information comes from Bill Sardi. And I'm telling you, I like it. And the title of the article is Efforts to Curb Obesity, Diabetes, and Arterial Disease in Recent Decades Have Been a Misdirection. Period. Second sentence. Origin of Aging and Disease Rooted in Gut Bacteria. So that's where we're starting off this morning, and I realize there's more information here than what I can cover in an hour, so I'm going to try to cull what I can and use what I can, and hopefully it will bless you. All I ask is that you come to the table with a clean spoon and just keep an open mind about this. Believe me, I'm not trying to manipulate you into the truth. I'm just going to deliver it, and you tell me if it's true or not, all right? I have a feeling you'll know. All right. Rates of obesity and diabetes, they rose during this last era, where at every turn there's a new diet book and a new exercise manual, and you can join clubs, if you want to call them that, where you count calories and you use one system or another to take the pounds off. You can try the low-fat diets, you can try all sorts of diets, but that hasn't done anything to stop the incredible rise in obesity and diabetes and heart disease and cancer. It hadn't done anything. I wish I could really tell you that what they've done has really helped, but it hasn't done anything. Arteries are still becoming clogged up with plaque. They're atherosclerotic. They're hardening. even if you eat 5 servings of vegetables a day. Of course, the 5 servings of vegetables a day are probably the recommended preference is going to be French fries with ketchup. So see there, ketchup contains a little bit of garlic, so that counts as a second group. It has a little bit of onions, there's your third group. Has vinegar, that's made from a vegetable, so there's 4. That and French fries makes 5. Well, right, that is not going to produce good health. Of course, in contrast, people in Japan are leaner and healthier, and they live longer, and guess what? They don't even have local gyms. They don't have a myriad of all the medications that we take here in America. Or they don't even get dietary advice. Believe it or not, France has the most centenarians, meaning people that are 100 years old or over per capita, and they eat diets rich in fat. And the diet is very, very high in cholesterol. Doesn't everybody know that's bad? I'm being sarcastic, folks. In a complete denunciation of modern medicine, the profit-making schemes of health plans and political efforts to make health care available to all come to an abrupt halt with policy-bending report published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that shows that access to health care does not deliver health. It does deliver treatment. By the way, if there's any new construction going on in Tyler, you can bet your bottom dollar it's a health clinic or a hospital or a bank. Anyway, and I'm going to, here's a quote here from preventive cardiologist John Mandrola. And I quote, "Health cometh not from healthcare." And he summarizes this report by saying, and this is his quote, comes from Medscape, April 2016, so it's pretty fresh. "The key determinant of a population's health is not gleaming new medical centers, but its individual behavior." You got that, folks? It's not what health care is available. It's what you do with the body that you've been given and blessed with. All right. According to an editorial in the Journal of the American Medical Association, only about 10 to 20% of positive health outcomes are accounted for by delivery of health care. That comes from the Journal of the American Medical Association, April 10, 2016. And what that means, folks, is, and I sure hope you can figure this out, I know you're smart enough to, that means there's between 80 and 90% negative outcome. Or if you don't, if that's too negative, you could say there's an 80 to 90% letdown or disappointment by people. So it doesn't pan out. Now, you tell me. If you went to a financial consultant and he said, "I have a 90% failure rate at achieving the goals that you're giving me, I still want you to invest your..." You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it at all. If you went to a car dealership and they said, "Hi, this is the new Fiat. It breaks down every other mile." Well, you wouldn't buy that either. Because what you need is you need reliable advice and transportation. I actually heard a story of a man that bought a Fiat. This was back in the 70s. So, a long time ago. Probably 40 years, but he didn't drive it over 200 miles and just completely, and they couldn't fix it and couldn't repair it. It was just a lemon. I bet you anything he didn't buy another Fiat. But see, this information doesn't hold true for medicine. People keep trying to use drugs and therapies to fix something they're not designed to fix. Now get this right here. This comes from the Mayo Clinic Proceedings, April 2016. So this is kind of hot off the press also. According to a recent authoritative report, now get this, only 3% of Americans live a healthy lifestyle. And this is how they define it: as being physically active, eating a healthy diet, and avoidance of tobacco. And in parenthesis it says, which takes 10 years off a person's life. You can't tell me that's not true. Did you know that my mother's a twin? Well, her twin sister was a smoker, and she has been gone a long time. But my mother's still here, who's not a smoker. So maybe that is some proof. And it says having a lean body shape, but that means 3 out of 100 people that you meet are going to be considered ideal and healthy. Maybe that means that 97% of us have room for improvement. And maybe you don't value... the body that God gave you. Some people don't. Some people prefer to abuse it and take advantage of it and burn it up and use it up and wear it out before they're even 30 years old. And they can do so successfully. Just like I said, smoking cigarettes every day, that leads to a 10-year reduction on your lifespan. But maybe you think differently than the world does. Maybe you're telling yourself, that is 10 years that I could be very useful, that I could serve others in a fabulous fashion, and I could really bless everybody around me. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I know there's going to be people listening right now that say, I don't feel good enough to live past 55 years of age. But what if you did? Wouldn't you say it's true that if you feel good physically, mentally, and emotionally, that you can be productive? You know, sometimes I think this is just way, way, way too simple, but we make it way, way, way too complicated. And I have been guilty of making things complicated. I know for a fact I can take a simple topic sometimes and, like, make it overly wordy or overly complex, which is probably not what I need to. So I'm a work in progress. Okay, so they're saying, according to the Mayo Clinic proceedings April 2016, that only 3% of Americans have a healthy lifestyle, thus producing good health, which means 97% do not, which, you know as well as I do, there's varying degrees of that. Some people just need a little bit of improvement, and that's nice. And there's people that have kind of dug themselves into a hole, or their back is against a wall, and they really don't have the luxury of just taking half measures, which, don't you think after doing this for 27 years, I've probably seen people take half measures, and in their mind, if they just sip an extra tablespoon of water, that should be about all they have to do, change-wise, to improve their health. Well, that's just not the way it is. There may be some foundational principles that we need to attack a little bit stronger. But anyway, the article goes on to say that the key marker of health was found to be zip code. And just think about this. Maps show almost a 15-year disparity in longevity between the most healthy and the least healthy zip codes. And this figure had nothing to do with how much doctoring was going on. I'll let you define the term doctoring however you want. Maybe it means delivering treatments. Just as simple as that. It said income is a predominant factor. This is according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. So, depending on where you live, you might live 15 years longer, 15 years less, or somewhere in between. Now, this is what I like right here. I find myself agreeing with this cardiologist. Dr. Mandrola says, and I quote him, "It's about time Americans wake up to the fact that the medical profession does not determine a population's health. Skip building a new medical center and buying screening vans and build more parks and bike paths," says Dr. Mandrola. "It is individual behaviors that determine the health of a population, largely lack of exercise, obesity, and tobacco use. Most of the credit modern medicine takes for improved health emanates from a steep decline in smoking rates, not an increase in availability of new medicines or other treatments." Oh boy, I don't know if you read the study. Came out this week, but they just reaffirmed number one cause of death in America is heart disease. And maybe everything that kind of is associated with that. I'll just leave it at that. Number two is cancer. But you know what number three is? And folks, these are big, big numbers. Number three cause of death if you live in America. It's errors, mistakes, accidents, drug reactions produced by the health profession. So if you want to say you were just fine, you went to the hospital for a test, and you developed a raging staph infection, and that's when all your fortunes left you, and you were forever changed by a staph infection. Well, that would count, especially if a person passes away. So, the number three cause of death in America. If we can't be honest, I don't know what I'm supposed to be. I'm not attacking anybody. I'm just telling you how it is. And so, there's going to be some people that hear this information. They say, okay, I just heard Dr. Morgan say that the number three cause of death in America is drugs, surgery, and doctors. Okay, well, that's true. Now, do you take that information and say to yourself, you know what, I'm finally deciding maybe I should actually take care of myself. Maybe I should start thinking a little bit more about what I'm doing. What if you decide to stop smoking cigarettes? I'd say that'd be a win. I can think of a couple of people in my life that would probably still be here if it were not for smoking cigarettes. And I don't think anybody could argue with that. So it's not like I'm coming down on cigarette smokers. But just because they build the largest health care center next door to your home or your neighborhood, it doesn't mean anything. I wish it did. Now, there's actually a chance if the health care center or the hospital did not construct a new hospital that you might actually be healthier. Or if they went on strike. You know, evidence proves that. Anyway. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's not just exercise and avoidance of tobacco. This is where we might start. Now, I know what you're going to say to this. Just because I give you that information, it doesn't mean that any physicians are going to buy into it or give it much thought. No. They're used to prescribing drugs at every turn. I've asked literally over 10,000 patients, what did your doctor tell you? What did they recommend to you? How long? And when they tell me what the diagnosis was, I say, well, how long was the visit? How much time did they spend in examination? And usually it's the same thing. It's between 5 and 10 minutes. Most of that's note-taking. Okay, it's not actually interaction with the patient. And they can arrive at a very complex diagnosis and prescribe a plethora of drugs to fix it. Okay. So, enter new information. Of course, if you've heard me ramble on for a long time, you already know this information. But I tell you what, it is just so good to hear the truth. And you might be saying, well, you're just choosing to believe this. You're right. I am biased. I am biased toward treatments and remedies and ideals that lead to great health. Of course I am. What am I supposed to be? Biased toward drugs and surgery that are unnecessary at times? But when they are necessary, you better go get your drugs and surgery. All right. In a series of experiments, researchers, they raised genetically identical mice in a germ-free environment, and then they instilled their digestive tract with intestinal bacteria collected from obese women and their lean twin sisters. So how they found identical twins and then found one that was obese and one that was skinny, I knoweth not if, but they did if. The mice ate the same amount of food, but the animals that received the bacteria from the obese humans, they grew heavier and they had more body fat than mice that were implanted with microbes from the lean twin sister. The overweight mice also exhibited less diverse community of gut bacteria. This comes from Scientific American 2014 and Science 2013. But you know what? This right here is just scientific research. I don't even know if you like it or not. I like it because I'm just kind of analytical. If you put me in a classroom, I'm going to have my pencil and pen out and taking notes and scribbling down things that I think are important to me. Or if the teacher of the class or the speaker mentions a book title, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to write it down. But I like that stuff. Not everybody else is analytical. Some people are visual learners. So when they pull up to the parking lot of Walmart, they watch a family that's very, very obese all get out at the same time, and they probably go, I wonder if that's contagious. Well, not a bad thought. So what I'm thinking is, when they have read this study, it's been out for, what, 3 years now? This should completely revolutionize healthcare because all the weight loss remedies ain't working, folks. It was a few years back, I read the latest stats from Weight Watchers. They said the average weight loss, and this is just an average, I realize some people lose more, some might lose less, but it's 1.2 pounds a month. I'm not going to make any comment on that. I'm going to let you decide if you like the number 1.2 pounds of weight loss by participating in a program. If you like that, fine. Keep it up. And just think, over the next, 3 years, you can achieve your ideal weight. Or in some people, 10 years. That's a lot of discipline, folks, for 10 years without seeing much to show for it. So, do people follow through and once they join a gym in January, do they stick it out? Never. Mm-mm, they don't. A few do. All right. This information I just told you is, like, fabulous. Is it going to change anything? Well, let me read this to you from Tim Spector, a geneticist at King's College in London, who has a Muslim mare now. He says that modern medicine has been on the wrong track for decades, and that the key is to, and get this, I know you're going to think I'm making this up, but I can't disagree with what the guy is saying. All right, he is a geneticist. Do you know what a geneticist is? He's an individual that has a tremendous level of sophisticated intelligence and knowledge of the human genetic code. You know how your body plays out all these genetic commands that are either good or bad anyway. You know how physicians say it's your family history, it's in your genes. I hear that every day, but that's not necessarily true. Okay, he says modern medicine has been on the wrong track for decades, and that the key is, and get this, is to eat coca and to drink coffee and red wine, because these are components of the Mediterranean diet. That comes from the Daily Mail of the United Kingdom. But it's not for the reasons that you might think. Yes, and this is the bottom line. These foods provide what are called polyphenols. If you don't know what that is, you might want to become acquainted with it, because it may change your mindset on what you're doing and thus produce a very good result. And you might tell me you're a happy, transformed woman or man. These foods that I just mentioned, chocolate, coffee, and red wine, they contain polyphenols, which act as strong antioxidants that are 3 times more abundant in the Mediterranean diet than the American diet. But they aren't working directly to improve health, even though they do. Come to find out, polyphenols that are found in olives, they're found in wine, they're found in coffee and tea and coca, they are prebiotics. That's the word that they're referring to, prebiotics. That is, they foster the growth of beneficial bacteria in your digestive tract. But you're thinking, well, Dr. Spector's just a geneticist. He doesn't really know what he's doing, does he? So here's his own experiment. Dr. Spector put his young son on a fast food diet for a few days, And then he found that it reduced the diversity of bacteria in his gut. The ratio of more beneficial bacteria to less beneficial bacteria was adversely altered. So 3 days of a junk food diet or fast food diet, you just enter whatever fast food restaurant you want and we'll call it good. It changed. He went from having plenty of good beneficial microbes to growing a whole bunch of unfavorable bugs. So, that's why I like what Dr. Spector's saying here. Come to find out, humans have about 4 pounds of bacteria totaling trillions, and numbers that exceed the number of cells in your entire body. So if you take all the cells of your heart and your brain and your liver, muscle, skin, digestive tract, any other tissue you can think of, you have more bacteria living in your gut then you have cells that make up your body. Kind of a crazy idea, but it's true. However, increased consumption of supplemental good bacteria, Acidophilus and Bifidus, as provided in yogurt, are not always the full answer either. I would just question how much bacteria is actually available in the yogurt or prebiotics. Polyphenols, and that's what's found in coffee and red wine and chocolate or coca. They're also found in berries. Have you ever heard of the pomegranate? Isn't it true that a pomegranate was sown into the wardrobe of the high priest? I think is what it says in the Old Testament, what it's been described. I find that interesting. So you find them in turmeric. Anybody ever heard me talk of turmeric, that yellow, orange, saffron-colored spice that actually might decrease inflammation, be a wonderful addition to someone with cancer to reverse it? Anyway, cranberries, grapes, especially when they take grapes and they ferment the grape juice into wine. All right. right. Oh, yeah, this is the one that gets me right here. Okay. I realize you can eat grapes and you can go get Welch's Concord grape juice, and it has health benefits. No argument there. But you get a 1,000-fold more concentrated polyphenols found in red wine than you do in grape juice. Just 1,000-fold. Is that not a phenomenal number? And it'll do more to... And what these polyphenols really do is they're feeding beneficial bacteria. So they do a great job of increasing the good beneficial bacteria that help you digest your food and help keep your body free from disease. And they help get rid of excess inflammation. But the problem is, if you don't have enough beneficial bacteria, all this information is really saying is you're going to have a whole lot more inflammation, and you're going to weigh a whole lot more, and you're going to have all the diseases that go along with that. So you just fill in the blank. If you tell me that you believe that mental illness comes from the gut, I can't argue with you, because that's where neurotransmitters are made. But what if your gut is a literal cesspool of toxic bacteria, and they're excreting their waste or excrement, however you want to say, it's fine by me, but they're going TT inside of you. And when you feed yourself Doritos and junk food and you eat lots of sugar, these toxic germs of bacteria are doing one thing, my friends. They're causing a tremendous alteration in your good neurotransmitters that make you feel joyous and happy and productive. Treating depression and anxiety should not be hard at all. It should be relatively easy, but we have made it so complex because we've convinced ourselves the only options are going to a psychiatrist, taking a questionnaire, and if you have, you know, 3 out of the top 15 criteria, then bingo, you're going to be on Prozac. You know what I heard the other day, and I don't really have proof of this, so just, you know, if it's not accurate, please forgive me. But you remember the story of Andrea Yates, don't you? Well, I heard in the court testimony, the doctor, 5 days before, you know, she did what she did to her little boys, 5 days, he drastically reduced Prozac or took her off of it. It's either one or the other. You just don't mess with that when somebody's been on that for years, especially at a woman that's prone to severe postpartum depression. I told it to my wife, and I thought to myself, okay, who's responsible for this? And I'm not trying to necessarily blame one person over the other. Okay, I am. You realize I can't tell a lie. I mean, I'm no good at it. So just about all these mass shootings and mass murders and all this chaos that's, you know, they blame it on the gun. The gun has nothing to do with it. But you have somebody that literally goes bonkers or nuts when a physician tries to radically change medication too abruptly or end it too abruptly. I mean, haven't you heard that some drugs you just need to wean off of over time? Okay, it's just as simple as that. There's probably some drugs you better get off of them as quickly as possible. But it's usually not the ones that are related to, you know, severe depression and anxiety medications. Those you might want to, you know, wean off more slowly. I really don't know any studies that show that a woman's supposed to be on Prozac for 20 years. I haven't read those studies. I've seen short-term studies. You can almost take it to the bank. All drugs, you're supposed to be on them no longer than 3 months. You're supposed to fix the problem, restore the health, get the organs in better working order, change whatever you need to change, and the person's happy and doesn't require drugs. But that's not the model we're working with. The model that we're working with is endless drugs forever and ever without any teaching or training when it comes to restoring yourself. Okay, I'm starting to ramble now. I'll stop. 90% of the bacteria in your digestive tract is composed of two families. There's one that's called Firmicutes. Let me do that again. I completely botched it. The Firmicutes. I'm going to call it that. And the bacterioids. I'll call it that. Those are the two types. So when the dominant species of bacteria are going to be the bacterioides, then you have great health. There's less inflammation. Everything's in good working order. You have the potential to make tremendous neurotransmitters, which in turn gives you fabulous brain health, and you have ambition and desire and motivation. You're more hormonally balanced. You don't have arthritis, and plus you're lean, and you feel good. And when people feel good, they get out and do stuff. So when you have the dominant species of bacteria or microbes called the the Firmicutes, you're going to have a whole lot of clogged arteries. You're going to have a whole bunch of diabetes. You're going to have a whole bunch of cancer. Everything is going to be rotten in your health. And no one can ever seem to figure out what to do about that. From the Journal of Digestive Diseases 2016, which if it says digestive diseases, you can bet your bottom dollar, every top gastroenterologist in the area is just salivating for the chance to read this journal. And so I'm reading to you just a line from it, and I quote, "Obese individuals not only exhibit a composition of gut bacteria that favors the Firmicutes over the Bacteroides, but they also exhibit a reduction in gut bacteria diversity." You know what that means is the gastroenterologists, which are pretty much the tops in the field, they're thinking, what do I do with this person with constant gastrointestinal problems? I think I'll give them aspirin, or I'll give them Metamucil, or I'll give them, why don't we just give everybody antifreeze? So when you read the top prescription drug for laxatives called Miralax, what's it called again? Let me think. Polyethylene glycol. You're going to think I'm making this up, but I was in Walmart this week in the automotive section, and all I did was I turned around the antifreeze because I wanted to make sure I read exactly. And as I read it to myself, you know, sometimes I talk to myself, kind of like I'm doing right now, but I read to myself, what is antifreeze? It's ethylene glycol. And then Paul, he's walking up, sneaking up behind me. He says, what are you trying to do, kill a bunch of cats? And I thought to myself, yeah, but what is a physician doing? It's prescribing Miralax. Polyethylene glycol. Well, sure, you're going to have a bowel movement if you take antifreeze. Your body's trying to eject it as fast as possible because it's a poison. No, they don't say it that way. They say it's a very osmolytic substance that attracts water to the bowel. Yeah, it's because your body's trying to get rid of a poison. It's like if you eat bad food and you vomit and you throw up. Don't you think God designed your body to protect itself from damage by ejecting toxic molecules? Yes. Okay. Enter people from France. There's more centurions there than anywhere else besides Okinawa, Japan. And they're eating all this horrible high-fat meat like leg of lamb and lamb chops and roast covered in fat and steaks that are just chock full of fat, tender meat. And they also drink wine. So why don't they pay the price? Well, number one, they probably do a lot more walking than we do here. And they're consuming polyphenols. And maybe that's what I want to encourage you to do is, between coffee and chocolate and red wine and turmeric and pomegranates and blackberries and blueberries and strawberries, these are called polyphenols. Olives. You like eating olives? I made a salad last weekend at a Whole Foods because I was attending a class in the afternoon. And I think I tried four or five different olives. One of them had a pit or a stone that I spit out. I think the grackle outside my pickup window ate it and choked to death. I'm joking, that didn't happen. Well, a version of that happened, but he spit out. He didn't choke on it. And here's what researchers are saying. One of the polyphenols that's found in red wine is called resveratrol. Have you ever heard that term before? The study demonstrates that resveratrol improves dysregulation of gut microbiota induced by a high-fat diet, increasing the Bacteroides to the Firmicutes ratio, and it increases the growth of Lactobacillus acidophilus and Bifidobacterium in mice. Who would have thunk this a decade ago? Well, my question to you is, what's going to happen with our health care and disease rates for this to even take? Well, this research comes from 2013 up until now. And what I want to do is I want to just ask you a simple question. The next time you go to your doctor, I want people to start calling in and telling me when doctors start teaching them this information, or nurses, or PAs, or physicians, anybody that's assisting, or I don't even care if it's the receptionist or the greeter at the front door. If there's a janitor cleaning the building, if he delivers his information to you, that counts too. I really don't care how you get it, as long as you get it. So I want to start getting some phone calls and doing my own survey and find out who's getting this good information. Truly, modern medicine has reached a turning point. You can just take that loosely here. Away from the emphasis on calorie and cholesterol reduction, and towards a greater understanding of how gut bacteria control weight and overcome obesity. It's only recently proposed that polyphenols, a group of natural molecules such as quercetin, resveratrol, and catechin, where's that found? It's found in green tea also. For example, from apple peel. Great. You ever heard the phrase, an apple a day keeps a doctor away? So it's found in apple peels, grapes, red wine, tea, coffee, by virtue of their fermentation products in the digestive tract. That means in your guts. And this exerts a weight-lowering effect. You know, if I don't read anything else today, why would I tell people to avoid coffee? Well, I could probably build a case that you don't want to consume coffee that's been sprayed with Roundup and every pesticide, and you just don't need those toxic residue molecules in your body. Is that really how you want to produce health? Is just more toxic chemicals for your body to eliminate? No, make it easy on your body. Just purchase organic coffee and then drink it. Can you drink too much? I think you can. I have had many people demonstrate to me that it is possible to drink too much coffee. Now, personally, I have not tried to drink too much coffee to see if I can make myself red-faced and have a panic attack and pass out. No, I'm not going to do that. Supplementation of the diet with polyphenols, which favors the growth of good bacteria in the digestive tract called bacterioides, over the Firmicutes, is now proposed for weight loss. This comes from the journal Chemical Biological Interactions 2011. So, it's 5 years ago. How about one from 2010? It wasn't until 2010 that researchers at Emory University in Atlanta first reported that gut bacteria not only defend against infection, but they also can control weight and efficient use of energy to burn rather than to store calories as fat, as evidenced by a change in the composition of gut bacteria. Okay? I don't know, is there anybody else talking about this besides me? But I dig this topic. If I'm not here this morning to bless you and to help you, then what am I here for? What am I doing? I kind of think that's why I was put here. Shouldn't I be doing what I was put here to do? Of course, 5 years later, researchers wondered about the remarkable observation that wine drinkers often exhibit lean bodies and better heart and blood vessel health, and whether this was due to changes in gut bacteria. Well, yeah, so here's a study. 10 obese and 10 healthy males were given 272 milliliters per day. That means 9 to 10 ounces of wine or 2 5-ounce glasses. Okay. They either used red wine or they used de-alcoholized red wine. And I have not been to the store. I have not been to the liquor store to find out if they sell de-alcoholized or if they sell red wine where the alcohol has been removed. I don't even know the answer to that question. Sorry. Wine only altered the bacteria of the obese subjects. That's because there was nothing to change in the lean people. Did you get that? It was the people that overweight that had the greatest room for improvement, but wine helped change that. It said that the de-alcoholized red wine favorably compared to alcoholic wine, which suggests it's the polyphenols in the wine that favorably affect the gut bacteria. The beneficial effect of red wine molecules, or polyphenols, was indirect via the changes in the gut bacteria. That comes from Food and Function 2015. I know this is wordy, but if you get it, you can have better health of your own doing because you have decided to take care of yourself. Okay. How many bacteria do you have in your gut? Trillions. Trillions. Trillions, trillions, trillions. You have more bacteria in your gut than you have cells that make up your body. All right. Where's the next bit of information? Do you realize I've been talking for 40 minutes? I just now looked at the clock. I apologize to you. If you want to call me, if you want to ask a question, if you want to make a comment, if you need some assistance, please, I'll do whatever I can to help you. You know for a fact, this is radio. It's not like I can get my hands on you and examine you and figure this out, but I'll do the best I can using Plan B. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I am doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Good.
Okay, so I have a 2-year-old who you have seen before, but fortunately you don't have to see her often. And I think she has a urinary tract infection. She doesn't have a fever or anything. It's just the smell of the urine that gives me a suspicion.
No, that's enough to go on.
Okay, so then I was wondering what you would suggest we do to handle this.
You know what they do in the ultra scientific community? They say if you give an adult or a child a substance called D-mannose.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of D-mannose before?
Yeah, I read about him yesterday.
Is it really? I can't even tell you anything you don't even know already. I'm just flapping my gums here. Well, that's what happens when you're dealing with ultra-intelligent people like yourself. But to make a long story short, they tend to promote the term, take D-mannose to prevent urinary tract infections. But in the real world, you know where it comes from, don't you? It comes from cranberries.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So all they're doing is they're isolating a compound, which in all this is true information. It greatly helps improve urinary tract infection. So, but then again, I'm kind of a radical. I'm not against you giving your daughter cranberries.
Yeah, you recommend like frozen or... Because I know cranberry juice comes with a lot of sugar.
Well, the reason I said the D-mannose is not to throw you off or anybody else, but if you gave her D-mannose powder, at least you can kind of bypass the tart, strong taste of the cranberry. And so you just got to find a way to successfully get this into her, and then you can change everything. So,
yeah. Alrighty. I can
tell you what I would do, and this is going to come across as a little bit unusual, but number one, I would take just plain Jane extra virgin coconut oil, and I would make some type of a tea. Now, in this case, I always think that I would give throat coat tea because its main ingredients are going to be marshmallow root and slippery elm and stuff like that, so that's very soothing to mucous line membranes. Did I hear your husband in the background just then?
No, that was her.
Sorry. I can't believe I said that. I thought it was him, though. But what you'll do is if you give her throat coat tea, what I want you to do is take coconut oil, and if it's warm, it'll melt just like that. But if you can encourage her to drink that, because coconut oil exerts a very powerful effect on cleansing the urinary tract.
Okay.
And so there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can put it in throat coat tea. Obviously, let her drink as much of that as she wants. Yes. I think it has a very... Have you ever tried it before?
No.
Oh, I think it's super pleasant. I mean, they sell it at Walmart.
Right. I've seen
I wish I had said that. Now, my stash is going to be taken off the store shelf, and there will be none left for me. I've got to go right now, ma'am, because I got to run to Walmart and get my throat coat tea. I'm just joking. But if you would do that, and I would probably rub coconut oil just into the skin below her belly button over the bladder area. No, I'm not saying that's ultra-scientific. I just think it works.
I believe you. It absorbs a lot, so...
Well, I mean, you might have to just let her run around the house without, you know, undergarments while you have it on because it's oil. You're probably going, great, now I have oil in all the clothes.
It might be the time to potty train.
Hey, that's the funnest part of a 2-year-old.
Oh, no.
You know what? I have not wiped a million bottoms in my lifetime or helped No, I'm joking. That would. But I tell you what, my wife usually says, it's your turn. He wants you to come in and take care of him. I'm going, okay. But you know what? You just do those things as a parent without thinking about it. So the number one predictor of all time, if an infection is going to turn for the better quickly or if it's going to drag out forever, is going to be sugar consumption.
Yeah, which she's very limited in that already.
Yes, and I know that. You're just absolutely the very best mother of all time. So a consideration would be I would just give her vegetables and meat. If she'll eat that, but I would probably cut out all grains and fruit for a couple days.
Okay.
So if you find some cranberry concentrate that you want to give her, I'll take it.
All righty. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. And all your relatives that criticize you for giving her D-mannos, they can look it up and find out you're really, really ultra-intelligent. I know, there's probably some people thinking, shouldn't we give the child massive doses of antibiotics? Well, you can do that. But you know, the studies show now that the more antibiotics that a person has in their lifetime, the greater the cancer they have in their lifetime. It's just as simple as that. There's a trade-off for everything. I know if you have double pneumonia, you need antibiotics. That's a cure for you. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I'm calling. You have helped me with a health issue that I had, and I was talking to a member of my church yesterday who's going through some health problems. She just had back surgery about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she was complaining that she is experiencing very low energy. She's usually a very high-energy, active person.
Well, you can just bet your bottom dollar the surgery just drained her of all her resources, her energy in reserve. Poor thing.
Okay, well, I was wondering if you had any suggestions that I could pass on to her that might help her regain her energy?
Well, what I want you to do is please take what I'm saying with a grain of salt, but one of the studies that I read yesterday morning that I thought was just incredible, in this particular study they took what were called elderly mice, that's M-I-C-E, or a mouse, or Mises, whatever you want to call them, and what they did was they injected them with cancer cells. And guess what happened? Every single time, cancer would flourish in the elderly mice, because one thing that's very, very obvious when you look at studies is as we age, the thymus gland, which is one of the most important glands in the body, but I always think if somebody had surgery and they're not really recovering as quickly as they'd like, my mind goes to the thymus gland. Have you ever heard of the thymus gland?
Yes.
Okay, so what they did was they tried a different experiment. They did the same experiment, but this time, when they injected the cancer cells into the mice, they also gave them thymus extract. And if I'm not mistaken, it was calf thymus. And are you sitting down?
No, I'm standing up. But,
okay, if I hear you fall over into the wall after I tell you this, I'm just joking about that. But when they gave the mice the thymus extract along with the injected cancer cells, guess what happened? They didn't develop cancer. Because the immune system, so if somebody has a surgical, that's why if a man tells me I had open heart surgery and I just cannot recover, I cannot get well, I think thymus gland. Because they catch everything that comes along and their immune system becomes very lazy and sluggish and it can't perform very well.
Yes.
And so if they gave aged mice, or I don't know what the date, were these mice, 532 days old or 570? I don't know the answer to that. I can look it up. But if they say aged mice, I'm guessing they're not teenagers, all right? And
okay.
So teenage mice would have a very large thymus gland, but as you age, it begins to atrophy and shrink. You know, if you told me that you had a bad cold 2 days ago, and you feel tired and exhausted, I'd say it's because your thymus gland will shrink to half its size in just one day because it gives all its energy to trying to battle the infection. So she might need some thymus extract. If she wants to put a bounce in her step and she wants to heal a bit faster, we might want to look at the thymus. Which incidentally, have you ever heard of an artificial sweetener called Splenda?
Yes.
Would you think that it's very healthy for humans or very, very, very bad for humans?
Possibly very bad.
Yes,
I don't know.
And one of the latest studies shows that when people consume Splenda, or if you want to call it sucralose, that's fine too, same thing. It's just chlorinated sugar. What it does, it destroys the thymus gland. Personally, I think the only way to change it is we're going to have a massive class action lawsuit against the makers of Splenda showing that it causes cancer and diabetes and heart disease. But, that's just my take on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't seen them remove it from the store shelves yet. Whew.
Right.
Anyway, but those are some things that I would think of. I know that back in the 1940s, You know what the procedure was when they did like a back surgery? They instructed the nursing staff to pack all surgical wounds in castor oil to make sure that the surgical wounds would heal very, very quickly and the patient would recover and it would prevent infections of the surgical incision site. And I think that's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. My hat goes off to surgeons of 1942. Way to go.
Okay. So you recommend the thymus extract for her, and are you also suggesting the castor oil, or...
Well, you know, sometimes one of the things you're looking at the site of a surgical incision is there's just so much toxic debris there, you're trying to draw it out and pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
This happened on Sunday, but a gentleman told me that his head was hurting. I looked at it, I said, do you have an infection there? And he said, I think I might have an ingrown hair. I said, okay. His wife told me that he had pain behind his right eye and pain in his ear, and he just was getting very, very concerned about it. And, of course, he says that I gave him a voodoo technique over the phone. I don't think it was a voodoo technique. All I told him to do was take calcium bentonite clay, which he told me they had, mix it in water to make mud, and put on top of it. And she told me his pain began to go away. So is that voodoo? I don't think so. We're just drawing the poison out.
No,
Sometimes that's what I think of. When someone's had a surgical procedure, sometimes I like castor oil or olive oil or shea butter or wheat germ oil. But I also love calcium bentonite clay because you're trying to help assist the body by pulling out toxins. I mean, I don't want to overthink this too much. If you have poison in a surgical site, you want to draw that out. You know, in the real world, surgeons do surgery all the time, and the patient goes, what's all this pus and discharge coming out? Well, okay, your body's trying to drain it, get rid of the poisons. I'm just saying let's help it. And the quicker that we drain it, see, when you have a rich amount of energy in reserve, this is when your body can heal very, very quickly, which is what we want. And the thymus gland, if a person's consuming artificial sweeteners, your thymus gland doesn't have a chance to heal anything.
Okay.
This might be a side note, but I'm going to say it this way. If you have decided that you want to live and you want to be a blessing to yourself and your family and your others and you want to be free of disease, you better knock off the artificial sweeteners.
Okay.
But if you want to just be a slug and be a strain on the entire system, maybe you should have as much Splenda as possible because that's the way it's going to be. You're not preventing diabetes, you're causing it.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay.
Did I kind of go overboard on that? I probably did.
No. Okay, well, you helped me. Calcium, did you also
Yeah, it's say called, it's called bentonite clay. Yeah, you just make like a mud pack. And, of course, I have my own personal history of using it, and I'm very thankful for it, but it's dirt cheap. That was actually kind of a joke, but it is dirt cheap. But it's called bentonite clay.
Bentonite clay.
Yeah, just make sure you get the kind that's called food grade. And you can't go wrong.
Oh, okay, great.
I mean, didn't Jesus spit into the mud and make clay packs for the blind man?
He did, yes.
I'm not saying that he healed them without the clay, but that's what he used.
All right. And then I had another question. In the past, I've heard you give some recommendations for people who suffer from Parkinson's, and
you know what the latest treatment is in the country of Brazil for Parkinson's?
No, what is it?
Their top recommendations for Parkinson's in the country of Brazil, they're now using cannabis oil as one of the most effective remedies of all time.
Wow.
So if you are you planning a vacation to Brazil?
No.
Are you reconsidering?
No. But that information is very, very, very helpful because I've been learning that there's much healing qualities in cannabis oil, but I had no idea that it would also be effective.
And believe me, I'm not trying to be offensive on any level, but I think I would be a fool today if I threw the baby out with the bathwater, meaning, yeah, I know for a fact when people smoke dope, that's bad, 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 bad. You can't convince them of it. They say it's, but hallucinogenic. They do things they wouldn't normally do. But the cannabis oil just comes from the flowering bud, and it doesn't have those toxic hallucinogenic properties to it. Anyway,
okay.
But I think they call it, what's the name of the company that's doing this? But if I'm not mistaken, you just buy the stuff over the counter. Now, I realize that doesn't fit the medical model. Because if you get a drug called Marinol to increase appetite, the medical profession has a drug called Marinol. Is that the name of it?
I'm not familiar with it.
Well, anyway, if somebody has been blasted by chemotherapy and radiation and they're just death chewing on a cracker and feel like they're about to die because they have no appetite and they don't want to eat, a medical doctor will prescribe Marinol to increase appetite. And guess what it is? It's just marijuana. Guess what the price is? Guess what the price is for a month's supply?
What is the price? I have no idea.
Yeah, if it's prescribed by a medical doctor, it's like over $500. That is ridiculous.
Wow.
You could probably do the same thing for $10 in the real world. Anyway, so you tell me, I'm not going to pursue that thought. See there, I just put the brakes on. I did not say what I was really thinking. That's probably good, because I really want to be a source of encouragement. So I know that you're smart, though. You can figure that out. One is probably designed for one purpose and one purpose only, to generate huge, huge profits for one group at the making other people dirt poor. But anyway, that's all I'll say about that. But anyway.
Okay. All right.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for your phone call. I really enjoyed visiting with you today.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye. All right. Here it is right here, because I know that you like research as much as I do. Artificial sweeteners may adversely affect or alter the microbiome. That's just a fancy term for the microbes that live in your gut. That's the community of bacteria in the intestines. And they indirectly facilitate the buildup of fatty plaque in the arteries. That's called atherosclerosis. That comes from Nature 2014. Despite Splenda or aspartame being calorie-less, artificial sweeteners like saccharin, sucralose, aspartame, they induce glucose intolerance. That means if you consume those, you're headed toward diabetes. And if you have diabetes, you're certainly making it worse. Now, who would have thought that? I don't know. If your doctor is recommending aspartame or Splenda or sucralose or saccharin, I'm not trying to be contentious this morning. But you tell me, what's the truth here? Oh, okay, come on. Both of us can't be right. You can't have all the doctors and physicians and dietitians saying eat Splenda and have me say don't and have it make logical sense. Okay, one of us is right, one of us is not right. I just happen to know that I am right. No, obviously, that's why I like that passage in Acts 17, verse 11, and the Bereans were more noble than those in Thessalonica. Yeah, they questioned what Paul and Silas were saying, but what they did was they compared against the Word of God. So you tell me, are we winning the war with diabetes and cancer and heart disease? No! What's the number one cause of death in America? Heart disease. Are we improving that? No. Are we having fewer heart procedures like stents and bypasses? No, we're having more. Is there less diabetes now than what there was 10 years ago? The answer is no, we are not. Are we curing obesity? No, not even close. Not even a little bit. Anyway. I think I'm officially past time. Please forgive me.